Here's a scenario I want you to sit with for a second. You fly into a towered airport regularly. You know the frequencies, you know the pattern, you know the runway. One Saturday morning, you show up early, maybe 5:30, maybe 6, and you key up the tower frequency. Silence. The tower isn't open yet. Here's my question. What airspace are you in right now? If you said I don't know, that's honest. If you said Class D, you might be wrong. And if that uncertainty made you a little uncomfortable, good. That's exactly why we're talking today. I'm Pattern, this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar, and today we're going deep on Class D airspace. Not just the textbook definition, but what happens to it when nobody's home at the tower, and what you need to know before you show up. Before we get into it, quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the pilot journey. For solo, private, instrument, commercial, they've got a coin for each one. Great way to mark the milestones that matter, AviationSoul.com. All right, Class D, let's walk through this together. Class D airspace exists to protect the area around airports that have an operating control tower but don't have the traffic volume to justify Class C or Class B. Think your regional airports, your smaller general aviation hubs. Airports where you'll find flight schools, charter operations, maybe a regional airline doing a turn or two a day. On your sectional chart, Class D appears as a dashed blue circle around the airport. The floor of Class D is the surface. The ceiling is typically 2,500 feet above ground level, though that varies from airport to airport. The lateral size also varies, typically 4 to 5 nautical miles in radius. But some Class D airports are smaller and some have extensions that stretch the boundary to protect instrument approach corridors. Always check the chart supplement for the specific numbers at the airport you're visiting. Don't eyeball it. Now here's the critical requirement for entering Class D airspace. You need to establish two-way radio contact with the control tower. That sounds simple. Students memorize it quickly, but let's talk about what it actually means, because most students get it slightly wrong. Two-way radio contact does not mean the controller has said cleared to land. It does not mean they've assigned you a squawk code. It means the controller has responded to your initial call-up and used your call sign in that response. That's the standard. If you call up and the controller says, aircraft calling, standby, that is not two-way radio contact. They did not use your call sign. You cannot legally enter Class D on a standby. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The moment the controller acknowledges you with your call sign, even just Cessna 4567 Bravo standby, you now have two-way radio contact. You can enter the airspace. You still need a clearance to land before you actually touch down, but the entering part is legal the moment they say your tail number back to you. That distinction matters when the frequency is saturated and you're approaching the Class D boundary. You don't need to be fully sequenced. You need your call sign acknowledged. Let's talk about how to make that initial call correctly. Before you ever key the microphone, get the Automatic Terminal Information Service, or ATIs. The ATIs gives you current weather, the altimeter setting, the active runway, OTISs to air missions or NOTAMs, and any special procedures the tower wants arriving traffic to know. Listen to the whole thing. Write down the identifier. It'll be a letter of the alphabet, Alpha through Zulu. Then your initial contact sounds like this. Riverside Tower, Cessna 4567 Bravo, 10 miles north at 4,500, inbound for landing. Information, Charlie. That single transmission gives the controller your aircraft type, your tail number, your position, your altitude, your intentions, and confirmation that you have the current ATIs. They can respond knowing exactly who you are, where you are, and what you want. Short, complete, no fluff. Controllers appreciate it. When your call-up is clean, you tend to get a quicker, more useful response. When it's incomplete, they have to ask follow-up questions, which slows things down for everyone on the frequency. Now, about airspace dimensions. When you look at a Class D on the sectional, you'll see the ceiling displayed in a box near the airport symbol, typically showing the altitude in hundreds of feet, mean sea level or MSL. Sometimes you'll see a dashed blue line that doesn't form a perfect circle. Maybe it has a bump on one side or an asymmetrical extension stretching toward an instrument approach corridor. Those irregular shapes protect specific flight paths. An extension might cover the final approach course, so the controller can sequence you before you ever enter the main circle. The key thing to know is that the boundary is not always what you draw from memory. Look at the actual chart before each flight into unfamiliar Class D airspace. The Airman Certification Standards, or ACS, will expect you to know these requirements cold for your oral exam. The examiner is looking for fluid understanding, not recitation. They want to hear you explain why the rules exist, not just quote, regulation numbers at them, and the why is straightforward. Class D keeps traffic orderly around airports with active controllers. It requires communication before you enter so the controller can sequence you, issue traffic advisories, and coordinate your arrival with departures. It's a safety structure built on the assumption that someone is in that tower with a radar display and a radio. That assumption is critical because it leads directly to what I want to spend the second half of this segment on. What happens when the tower closes? This is where pilots get into real trouble sometimes without even knowing it. Most Class D towers are not open 24 hours. Many operate during daylight hours only or within specific windows. The tower hours are published in the chart supplement, which is the FAA's current version of what pilots used to call the Airport and Facility Directory, or AFD. You can pull it up in your electronic flight bag or EFB 4 flight Garmin Pilot, whatever you use. But you have to actually navigate to it and look. The tower hours are not on the sectional chart itself. When the control tower closes, the Class D airspace designation goes away. At most airports with published instrument approaches, when the tower closes, the airspace transitions to a Class E surface area. A Class E surface area is the FAA's way of keeping the airspace structure around the airport intact for instrument operations, even without an active controller. You don't need to establish radio contact before entering Class E. You're not under positive control. You operate using Common Traffic Advisory Frequency, or CTAF, procedures. You make position reports and listen for other traffic. At some smaller airports without published instrument approaches, when the tower closes, the airspace may transition to Class G, which extends from the surface upward. Class G is uncontrolled. No contact required. Different cloud clearance requirements apply. How do you know which way your airport transitions? Look at the sectional. Here's the key. A magenta dashed line around an airport indicates a Class E surface area. If you see both a blue dashed circle and a magenta dashed circle around the same airport, the blue is Class D when the tower is active. The magenta is what kicks in when the tower closes. If you only see the blue dashed circle with no magenta border, there may not be a designated Class E surface area, and the airspace could revert to Class G when the tower is closed. The chart supplement removes the ambiguity entirely. It will tell you exactly what the airspace is after hours. 5 minutes with that document eliminates a whole category of confusion. Let me walk through a real scenario. You're planning a Sunday morning flight out of a regional airport you know well. You always fly there on weekday afternoons when the tower is open. You show up Sunday at 6:30. Tower hours are 0700 to 2100. You're early, you check in on the tower frequency. Nothing. You switch to CTAF, make your position reports, taxi out, and depart without incident. At 7:03, you're 2 miles from the airport, climbing through 3,000 feet. The tower just opened. You are still inside the Class D boundary. You have not established two-way radio contact with the now-open tower. If the controller sees you and tries to raise you, you're not on their frequency. The fix is not complicated. Know the tower hours before you fly. Plan your departure so you're well outside the Class D before the tower opens, or contact the tower when they come on frequency and establish contact, even if you're already airborne. Controllers handle this regularly. Most will reach out to traffic in the area as they open, but they need you on the right frequency. Some airports have specific published procedures for traffic that was airborne before the tower opened. Check the chart supplement for your home airport if you fly during that transition window. A few more practical points before we close out. Night operations. Some pilots assume that a dark, quiet airport must be uncontrolled. Not always true. If the tower is open past sunset, which many are, the airport is still Class D until those published hours end. Night flying does not change the airspace designation. Check the hours for each specific facility. Traffic pattern altitude at Class D airports. The standard for a single engine piston is typically 1,000 feet above ground level, but many Class D airports have non-standard altitudes published for noise abatement or terrain reasons. More importantly, the controller may give you specific instructions that override the standard. Make right traffic. Runway 27. Report midfield downwind means exactly that. Follow the instruction. Don't substitute your own mental default, student pilots and Class D airspace. If you're a student pilot planning your first solo into a towered airport, Class D requires an instructor endorsement in your logbook before you go Part 61. Of the regulations requires that your instructor train you specifically for that airport environment and authorize the flight in writing. Don't show up at a Class D tower for your first solo without that endorsement. It's not just a formality. It means your instructor has flown you into that airspace, explained the procedures, and signed off that you're ready. Departures from Class D after takeoff stay on the tower frequency. The controller may issue traffic advisories, heading adjustments, or a frequency change. Some students think the conversation ends when the wheels leave the ground. It doesn't stay with them until they hand you off, or you've clearly exited the Class D laterally or climbed above the ceiling. Then transition to flight following your destination CTF, or whatever makes sense for the rest of the flight. Now let's lock in the numbers you need for your check ride. Visibility inside Class D is 3 statute miles. Cloud clearances are 500 feet below clouds, 1,000 feet above, and 2,000 feet horizontally. Those are the same basic visual flight rules, or VFR, cloud clearance requirements you'll find in Class C airspace, and they apply to any controlled airspace at and below 10,000 feet MSL. Don't mix them up with Class G, which has different requirements depending on altitude and whether it's day or night. For the oral exam, the examiner is going to ask you to walk through exactly what you need before entering Class D. Here's the flow, get the ATIS first. Make your initial call-up with position, altitude, and intentions, including the ATIS identifier. Receive a response that includes your call sign, that establishes two-way contact and allows entry. Then receive a clearance to land before you touch down. Maintain communication throughout your time in the Class D, and be ready to explain what changes when the tower closes. Know how to read the sectional to identify whether the after-hours airspace is Class E to the surface or Class G. Know where to find the tower hours. Know what CTAF is and how you'd operate in it. The examiner is looking for a pilot who thinks dynamically about airspace, not one who has memorized a static list of rules. Here's the bigger picture. Class D is one of the cleaner examples of a principle that runs through all of aviation. Airspace is not just a map you memorize once, it's a system that changes based on time, operations, and what's happening on the ground. The pilot's job is to know what airspace they're about to enter before they enter it. Most Class D incursions are not intentional. They happen because a pilot didn't know the tower was open, or misjudged the boundary, or assumed the airspace hadn't shifted when it had good pre-flight planning eliminates almost all of them. Pull up your EFB after this segment and find the nearest Class D airport to you. Work through the chart supplement entry. Tower hours, CTAF, frequency. After hours airspace type ceiling of the Class D, whether there are extensions, whether there's a magenta dash border. Do that exercise once for a familiar airport and you'll do it automatically for every airport after that. That's the habit. That's what sticks. Information today came from the FAA Aeronautical Information Manual, the Airman Certification Standards for the Private Pilot Certificate, and the FAA Chart Supplement. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Check those tower hours before you go. See you next time.